From the KGOU studios, I'm Rebecca Cruz, filling in this week for Suzette Gerlot, and welcome to Worldviews. Today I'm joined by Ambassador Hussein Mousavian. He represented Iran and Germany from 1990 to 1997 and argues that the Islamic Republic actually plays a stabilizing role during the current conflicts in Iraq and Syria.
Iran has prevented regime collapse in Iraq, and the Iraqi government could not resist fighting ISIS without Iran.
He also served as the head of the Foreign Relations Committee of Iran's National Security Council from 1997 to 2005, and was Iran's spokesman during its nuclear negotiations with the European Union.
They almost reached to a type of solution, but the U.S. was opposing any enrichment in Iran.
My conversation with the ambassador is coming up right after this hour's news from NPR. This is Worldviews. I'm Rebecca Cruz, and I'm sitting in this half hour for Suzette Gerlot, who's in Washington, D.C. My guest, Hussein Mousavian, has been a key diplomat for Iran for the past quarter century. He represented the Islamic Republic in Germany from 1990 to 1997, and then took a post as the head of the Iranian National Security Council's Foreign Relations Committee until 2005, where he served as the country's chief spokesman during nuclear negotiations with the European Union a decade ago. He's now a research scholar at Princeton University's Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs. Ambassador Mousavian, welcome to Worldviews.
Thank you.
Well, we're going to get into a discussion about the new Iranian nuclear deal with the United States and other allies. But I wanted to take us a step back and talk a little bit about your history with diplomacy from Iran, and particularly with the European Union and our European allies. What was that relationship like, and what successes or difficulties did Iran face in dealing with Europe?
Traditionally, Europeans, they have had a normal good relation with Iran, but in practice, after revolution, specifically during the war, 1980 to 1988, we had a troubled relations because Europeans, they supported Saddam Hussein's invasion of Iran.
You're talking about the Iran-Iraq war in the 1980s.
Right. 1980, when Saddam invaded Iran. And Europeans, they supported Saddam, especially when Saddam used chemical weapons against Iranians. Europeans and Americans, they provided material and technology for Saddam Hussein. I was engaged directly in Iran-Europe relations from 1986. And the relation got relatively normal just after the war under the umbrella of critical dialogue. We had high-level dialogues with Europeans discussing the issues of disputes between Iran and Europe. Nevertheless, the relation, specifically the economic relation, was very good. But in 2005, when Ahmadinejad was elected as president of Iran, practically Europeans joined the U.S., for sanctions and pressures. Nevertheless, at the end, I think with the nuclear deal, Europeans, they now have understood they made a big mistake, because before 2005, they had over 50% share of Iranian economy. And just during 8 years of sanctions, they lost almost all their shares to China. And now China has 60% share of Iranian trade and economy. That's why they are rushing and they are in hurry so much after the nuclear deal to recover what they have already lost.
Well, and you said 2005. Prior to that, this mediator role seemed very significant. The United States was kind of disengaged, if you will, and Europe was really communicating and trying to come up with a deal with Iran. What changed? Was it just the election, or was there pressure externally, or why did we see that change?
No, I think in 2003 to 2005, when I was spokesperson of Iranian nuclear team during Khatami, Iran and the EU three European countries, UK, Germany, and France, They almost reached to a type of solution, but the Europeans could not deliver the deal because the U.S. was opposing any enrichment in Iran. The U.S. position was zero enrichment in Iran, no single centrifuge in Iran. That's why the efforts by Iran and Europe to find a peaceful solution failed in 2005. However, we had suspended temporarily the enrichment activities in order to reach a deal. After the election 2005, Ahmadinejad restarted the enrichment. And starting the enrichment in Iran without political deal, coupled with some harsh rhetorics against Israel, like denying the Holocaust, created enough reason for Europe to join the U.S.
Two administrations later, an administration on this side of the ocean and a new administration in Iran. How important do you think that new leadership is?
I think Obama's strategy to engage with Iran, basically it was really a correct strategy, but I believe he failed in his first period of his presidency. To my understanding, he didn't have right people to follow the engagement policy. But in the second term, with the combination of Obama, John Kerry, Chuck Hagel, and then Obama, John Kerry, and Moniz, I think they have been up to now relatively successful to follow the engagement policy, because ultimately, and after 35 years of hostilities, the two countries engaged in direct talks since September 2013 at the very high level, the foreign ministers, and in less than 2 years of negotiations, they could find a solution. Therefore, I believe this is a good, big step, but this is the first step.
And the Iranian leadership, we've seen some changes there, or a willingness to engage on a different level?
No, definitely. I mean, the situation during Ahmadinejad was clear. I mean, the tension heightened at the highest level for 8 years of his presidency, not only with the U.S., with Europe, with the Western countries, even with the regional countries. But Rouhani is a moderate personality. His policy was clear when he was top nuclear negotiator. The deal reached in 2013, the principles were exactly the principles we were negotiating and we proposed, Europeans, in 2005. It means if the U.S. would have accepted basically enrichment in Iran, the deal could be reached during Rouhani's period leading the nuclear talks in 2005. He is practically following the same policy. His strategy is zero tension with the regional countries, with the West, with the neighbors. And I believe relatively he has been successful to calming the situation between Iran and the West. And he's doing his best for the region, but perhaps the crisis we have already in the region, like Syria, Yemen, Iraq, Afghanistan, all these crises, it is not what Rouhani was responsible or made during Rouhani time. It began, Arab Spring, you remember, began in 2011. And handling this crisis, specifically with a difficult neighbor like Saudi Arabia, is not easy, but I'm confident he would try to do his best.
But what's gotten us here in the last 2 years? We've been in these negotiations for 2 years, which in some ways seems like a long time, but in the grand scheme of things, relatively quick process to come to some sort of consensus. But what's happened these last 2 years?
The first was Iran's readiness to comply and to be committed with the maximum level of obligations defined in non-proliferation treaty, NPT, and in the framework of the IAEA, International Atomic Energy Agency. And we told in 2003 to Europeans that we have no problem to go for transparency, open nuclear program, at the highest level of international rules and regulations. We told them we are 100% open, and we have only one red line, which is our legitimate right for peaceful nuclear technology under non-proliferation treaty, like other member states of NPT. This was the only red line we had. But I said, as I said before, I mean, it was not possible because the U.S. was not ready. But when the serious direct negotiations between Iran and the U.S. began practically September 2013, in the first two, three rounds in New York, the American delegation, they understood Iran has no problem to accept every commitment, obligation within non-proliferation treaty. I think this was the crux of the matter why we reached nuclear deal, because ultimately for the U.S., for Europeans, for international community, non-proliferation treaty, NPT, was base, was the criteria. And we don't have anything else as the base. This was one. Second, there was some allegations about possible military dimension issues, which practically was provided by American or American-Israeli intelligence service to the IAEA with no documents. And since 2007, the IAEA had problem because the U.S. Had nothing as document to deliver to the IAEA to prove its claims. However, it was practically a deadlock. And when the talks began, Iran told the American team, the P5 plus one, that we are ready for a specific period to give the required access to the IAEA, even though perhaps for a short period would be needed access beyond NPT in order to resolve all these possible military dimension issues to make sure that Iran is not after nuclear bomb. This was the second. Third, the limits. I mean, if the first one was the maximum level of transparency, the U.S. also was looking to resolve the possible military dimension issues. And the third, the U.S. was after, as they said, blocking all pathways to nuclear bomb. And Iranians, they had never had problem to agree because they were not after nuclear bomb. Iranians, they were happy because they were claiming they are not after nuclear bomb. The U.S. is happy because they were thinking Iran perhaps would go after nuclear bomb. Therefore, they could agree on all major elements, measures, which would block any possible diversion toward weaponization of Iranian nuclear program. Practically, these three were the major reasons we could get the deal.
That's Ambassador Hussein Mousavian, who spent 15 years representing Iran on the world stage in the 1990s and early 2000s. You can find this conversation on our website, kgou.org. We've also shared it on Twitter, at WorldviewsKGOU. You can also download all of our past episodes from iTunes. Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. I'm Rebecca Cruz, and this is Worldviews. This is Worldviews. I'm Rebecca Cruz, in this half hour for Suzette Gerlot. I've been talking with Ambassador Hussein Mousavian, a longtime Iranian diplomat, about his country's role in fighting ISIS and the country's nuclear future.
And this has indeed been called a historic deal, even as we've watched this process unfold throughout the spring as discussions of an imminent deal and then moving forward there. I think, in fact, it's been called Obama's, you know, the highlight of his career, that and perhaps opening relations with Cuba. But it hasn't been an easy path in this country, as you know. And I'm curious also how the reaction has been among your common everyday person in Iran. What's your interpretation of that?
It is the mirror image of American domestic situation. The political fighting, the political challenge in Washington, and the difference in public opinion is exactly the same as the situation you have here. But the bottom line, I believe, for the majority of American people and Iranian people is no war. I believe neither Iranians nor Americans, they want war. And specifically for the U.S., with two disastrous wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, they don't want to experience the third disaster. But some believe here in the U.S. that the deal is not good and the U.S. could get more. This is the difference. I mean, the overwhelming majority of Republicans in the Congress opposing the deal, they believe the deal is not good enough. Most of them, I believe, they don't want war. But they believe or they think more negotiations would be possible, which is not. I'm sure definitely neither Iran, nor Russia, nor China, and nor Europe would come back again to nuclear negotiation table because they have already experienced and invested time for 13 years. And they are not going to continue another 10 years because of some thoughts in the U.S. Congress. And second, I believe these majority of Republicans in the U.S. Congress are wrong, because the deal is the most comprehensive deal ever reached during the history of non-proliferation.
If this is kind of taken off the table, if you will, and this issue is dealt with, what a role can Iran or should Iran play in the rest of the region? Do they have the ability to serve as a stabilizer for the region?
Again, here, I think there is a big misunderstanding in the West, specifically in the U.S., about the regional role of Iran. For 35 years, if you were an Iranian, you would have to have a strategy to defend your country. What you see the role of Iran today in the region, everybody is crying, Iran is everywhere, is practically a response to the role of Arabs trying to disintegrate Iran. Second, look at the region for a moment. Libya. Who invaded Libya? NATO, Europe, U.S., Arabs. Iran had no influence, no interference. What is the Libya situation today, and who is responsible? Is Iran? Which country has the worst situation today in the Middle East and North Africa? Is Libya first and Syria second? Then, did Iran has any role bringing the collapse of Mubarak in Egypt? No one claims. Iran had no role about the situations in Tunisia, the fall of Ben Ali, the U.S. ally, Mubarak, the U.S. ally, but it happened. Iran has used its influence two Arab countries, one Iraq, one Syria. Iran has prevented regime collapse Arab regime collapse in Iraq and in Damascus. Without Iran, already Baghdad should have collapsed. Everyone knows. ISIS should have captured Baghdad. And the Iraqi government could not resist fighting ISIS without Iran. Still today, Bashar is a legal, legitimate government in Syria. They have representative United Nations. Who began to fight Assad? Who began to interfere? Who began to send money to opposition, to terrorists? Who sent weapons to terrorists in Syria? Joe Biden said correctly, openly, at his Harvard talk, 2014, the U.S. main problem is its own allies in the region giving weapons and money to terrorists. It is known. Therefore, Iran is helping the stability in Syria, supporting the legitimate legal government, which is a legal representative of Syria in the United Nations, and Iraqi government.
And this is a role that you can envision Iran continuing to play to try to...
I believe
to...
more, because whether we like it or not, Iran is the key figure in the region on major regional issues, Afghanistan, Yemen, Iraq, Syria, Lebanon.
And it also doesn't seem to have the internal issues that some of these other countries are dealing with, that
right.
There is a stability in
right.
Iran.
And the reason our neighbors are very much angry, because they see after 35 years of war, military strike against Iran, economic war, political war, intelligence war, Iran now is the most stable, powerful country in the region. That's why they are very, very angry. And on the other side, the Arab countries which they have received the most money, weapons, support from the U.S., they are the most vulnerable countries in the region. That's why they really are worried. However, what I was saying is that whether we like it or not, the U.S. is the key international player in the region. And Iran is the key regional power. Without Iran-U.S. cooperation, I really cannot imagine peaceful crisis management in the Middle East.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to my conversation with Ambassador Hussein Mousavian, a former Iranian diplomat who is now at Princeton University's Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs. There's more information on our website, kgou.org. Worldviews is a collaborative partnership between KGOU and the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. For Brian Hardzinski, who edited our interview, Sam Dupre, who put the show together, and our digital content intern, Ivy Dyson, I'm Rebecca Cruz.